The debt crisis officially started when the Mexican government declared that it couldn't pay back its external creditors in 1982. The crisis ended up involving scores of countries and large international banks. It took the rest of the decade to figure out how to resolve the problem. Most Latin American countries defaulted on their debt in the 1930s, mostly to private bondholders instead of commercial banks. Bondholders at the time pleaded with their own governments to take action, but their requests fell on deaf ears. It was a different story in the 1980s, when rich country governments became very involved in coming up with a solution. The difference was that big banks were now involved, and the crisis was so large as to put those banks at risk. The U.S. government set up what was essentially a cartel of lenders to Latin America to try to set some ground rules that would allow the debtor countries to avoid default and the financial system to avoid a crisis. Initially, the debt crisis was depicted as a temporary problem. It was described in terms of liquidity rather than solvency. That is, these countries lacked the money to pay back their debt immediately, but the idea was that if they were given some breathing room, they would eventually be able to service their debt. It was argued that the rich countries would start growing again coming out of their recession. This would fuel demand for exports from the debtor countries. So the countries in crisis were persuaded to keep paying loans in return for new debt. But in return for new lending, the creditors wanted something in return. Specifically, they wanted assurances that the debtor countries would reform in ways that would allow them to pay back their debts. While the problem was presented as one of liquidity, it's not clear if people actually believed this at the time. In any case, it quickly became clear that the problem was much deeper than that. Two problems became apparent. First, the exports of debtor countries rose, but commodity prices did not. And the increased volume of these new exports couldn't make up for their lower value. Thus, Latin American countries were no closer to being able to accumulate dollars to pay off their debt. Second, despite what the creditors had promised, very few banks were interested in putting more money into Latin America. Governments did provide some new loans, but very few came from commercial banks. The Baker Plan, named after then U.S. Secretary of the Treasury James Baker, was announced in 1985 at the joint IMF-World Bank meetings in South Korea. The goal of the plan was to reduce the net outflow of money from the debtor countries. And with this new initiative, commercial banks were supposed to lend another $20 billion to the 15 most heavily indebted countries. International financial institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were to lend $10 billion more. The total amount of debt was about $80 billion. So if the Baker Plan had worked, then the net outflow would have gone down by around 25%. Between 1987 and 1988, it became obvious that the Baker Plan was not going to solve the problem. Banks were still not interested in putting more money into Latin America. From 85 to 88, commercial banks loaned $12.8 billion to the highly indebted countries, which meant that they were reducing the amount of total loans they had made to these governments. Banks were intent on maintaining the fiction that the par value of the debt, that is, the amount that was originally loaned out, was actually equal to its market value. Since it was unlikely that many of these countries would actually pay off their debt, however, the market value was quite a bit lower than the par value. Some smaller economies, like Bolivia, Costa Rica, and Nicaragua, had already stopped servicing their debts. Peru announced that it would limit its debt payments to 10% of the value of its exports, making it a pariah in international markets. Banks weren't still overly concerned as long as the large countries continued to service their debt. When Brazil announced in February 1987, however, that it could no longer pay, then the game changed. By December of that year, the market value of Latin American debt in secondary markets had decreased precipitously. For instance, Colombia was the only country whose debt traded at more than 60% of its par value. That same year, Citicorp was the first large bank to give up the fiction that market value was equal to par value on these loans. The company had announced loan loss provisions of up to 30% of its loans to Latin America. Because investors already knew that the two values were not equal, and this announcement was an acknowledgement of reality, the bank's stock price actually rose. Rich country governments encouraged this by allowing concessions on loan loss provisions. The result was that other banks were quick to follow Citicorp's lead. A new plan for resolving the debt crisis was announced in March 1989. It was named the Brady Plan, after then-Treasury Secretary Nicholas Brady. This plan recognized that we were dealing with a solvency problem and not nearly a liquidity issue. That is, even if payments were stretched out for longer periods of time, countries may be unable to fully pay back their debt. This represented a departure from the Baker Plan, which insisted that debt be paid back in full. The Brady Plan was negotiated by each country and its creditors, Mexico was the first country to hammer out a deal, and most subsequent negotiations used the Mexican example as a template. There were three options on the table. The first was that existing loans could be swapped for 30-year debt reduction bonds that would provide a discount of 35% of face value with a low interest rate. In the Mexican case, 49% of loans were swapped for these discounted bonds. The second option was that existing loans could be swapped for 30-year par bonds with a below-market interest rate of 6.25%. And in the Mexican case, 41% of loans were swapped for these par bonds. Third, banks could provide new loans at market interest rates over a 4-year period of up to 25% of their 1989 exposure. Fewer took this option. In the Mexican example, 10% of loans were covered by new lending. The new bonds, called Brady bonds, were securitized with U.S. Treasury bonds. IMF and World Bank were to finance the guarantees by putting up collateral or giving debtors money to repurchase their debt for cash. To qualify for the Brady Plan, countries had to be seen as making good economic policies that would encourage savings and foreign investment. As I mentioned previously, Mexico negotiated the first deal. By 1994, 18 other countries had followed suit, and $60 billion worth of debt had been forgiven. Typically, about 30 to 35% of a country's debt was forgiven. Many countries also retired a lot of their debt by purchasing it more cheaply in secondary markets. Because the market value was so much lower than the par value, it was a cheaper way to pay off the debt. For instance, Bolivia retired 5% of its debt at 16 cents to the dollar. Colombia retired 22% at 22 cents to the dollar, Chile 18% at 59 cents to the dollar, and Peru 31% at 21 cents to the dollar. The average market price in secondary markets was just 35 cents to the dollar. So why did the banks agree to debt reductions? First, it was well known that banks would not recover all of their loans from these countries. This information had been incorporated into their stock prices. So banks could follow Citicorp's lead and accept large losses on their debt without reducing the market value of the bank. For example, say that investors noted that Mexican bonds were trading in secondary markets at 40 cents on the dollar. These investors knew that Citicorp held a lot of Mexican debt, and because of this, Citicorp's shares were worth less as they were less desirable. So when Citicorp decides to sell $100 of its Mexican debt in secondary markets for $40, it would be losing $60 in the transaction. But its stock market price wouldn't fall because investors would have already incorporated that into its stock price. Second, despite the official rhetoric, the Brady Plan wasn't truly voluntary. Officials used a lot of moral suasion to get banks to go along with the plan. One way they did this was by announcing that banks could take tax advantages of recognizing losses on foreign loans, but noting as well that these tax advantages would go down over time. So if banks wanted to make a move, then this would be the time to do it. The market for Brady bonds became the largest and most traded market for Latin American bonds. By 1995, the secondary market turnover for these bonds totaled almost $1.6 trillion, equaling almost 60% of all trading in financial instruments from emerging markets. Brady bonds from Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina made up two-thirds of the total value of Brady bonds issued. Countries were eager to retire this debt, as its name was associated with the debt crisis and the problems of the 1980s. Mexico was the first country to negotiate the Brady bonds and also the first to retire all of their debt in 2003. In another video, I'll discuss the economic fallout of the debt crisis for Mexico, which was severe. As an example, real wages fell by almost half in Mexico from 1980 to 1988. If you want to learn more about resolving the debt crisis in the 1980s, the information from this video can be found in Ian Vasquez's 1996 The Brady Plan and Market-Based Solutions to the Debt Crisis, and Jeffrey Sachs, 1988, Making the Brady Plan Work.